Hey, Josh Felber here from Making Bank. Definitely appreciate you tuning in today. And today's guest, if you ever wanted to know how you can go from zero, almost a business failing, to $95 million in sales in 3 years, today's guest, he is amazing. He is unstoppable. He's going to dive in and teach you about mindset, teams, culture, as well as being the best leader that you can be. Tune in today to learn from ex-Navy SEAL platoon commander Alden Mills. Make sure you guys have your notebook, your pens, everything ready, and pay attention to what he's going to say, because he provides so many insights and nuggets that will help you in your life as well as your business. And again, make sure you guys like, share this, and also comment below, ask some questions. The guest loves this. Thank you for your time and attention today for tuning in to Making Bank.
You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super excited and honored for today's guest. Alden Mills has over 40 years of experience marked by both failures and successes across diverse realms, sports, military, business, and many more. Recognizing that leadership, whether of oneself or of others, is the pillar of success. Against all odds, Alden conquered asthma, rising to become a nationally ranked rower, as well as three-time Navy SEAL platoon commander, CEO, and author of his new book, Be Unstoppable, Unstoppable Teams, and Unstoppable Mindset, and his remarkable journey marked by more failures than successes serves as an inspiration empowering audiences to surpass perceived limits. His inventive spirit reflected in his childhood notebooks yielded over 40 worldwide patents, including the widely successful Perfect Push-Up, which sold over $95 million in sales within 3 years. So I'm super excited to welcome Alden Mills to Making Bank today.
Josh, honored to be here, and hello for everybody at Making Bank. Hopefully we can help you make a little bit more today.
Awesome, man. Well, I was super excited. I have always had a connection to the military side of this stuff through friends and everything else. I had depped into the SEAL teams way back when and had blown out my knee while I was training. Okay. And went back and got it all fixed and tried to get back in. But then they said, well, we'll give you your age waiver, but we're not going to give you a medical waiver. And so I was a little bummed, but my good friend that I was training with had made it in and made the teams. And I think now he's in Chicago. We touch base every couple of years and stuff.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, this was all the way back in 2004.
Okay.
so a little ways back. So I've always been a big supporter and of all the spec ops and everything, and owned a bunch of CrossFits and tried to always raise money for the different programs and things like that over the years to help out. So, well, since I couldn't help out on the other side.
Josh, first of all, I appreciate you wanting to step into the breach. And I know in particular that period of time, a lot of people had a call for service. And thank you for doing what you did with your CrossFits, because you'd be surprised how much of a community it really takes to help the special forces community. Because the military and the government will do a piece of it, but it's really everybody around the community that supports the families of everybody who's got to go into harm's way.
Yeah, I totally agree. And a good friend of mine right now, Rob Russell, he's a big guy and proponent of when everybody's coming out after they're done with their tours and stuff and duties, that he helps them reacclimate back into society and helps them kind of figure out business stuff and wealth and be able to invest money to grow and have something and all that. So he's actually out of down near Dayton, Ohio and everything. But I know he does a lot with all that.
It takes a tremendous village to support everyone.
For sure. So thank you for everything that you've done. Since then, it looks like you've created some amazing products as well as trainings and just continued the whole ethos of everything along your journey. So excited to learn more and see what we can extract to help people become better people as well as in business and leaders. So
I'm looking forward to it. That's why I'm here.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about, I guess, a little bit about your entrepreneurial experience initially. I mean, obviously with 40 patents.
Yeah.
The perfect push-up. I mean, that's like a household name and in the fitness side of things and all that.
Well, I tell you, you know when it originally started, and you alluded to it about a childhood notebook. I wouldn't say it was so much childhood as it was really young adult life. I knew when I had accepted my first SEAL platoon commander position, it was with these special little submarines called classified combat mini submersibles or SEAL delivery vehicles. The key piece was I knew I was going to be on a submarine for long periods of time with not much to do. So I kept my mind occupied by going in a corner, putting on a set of headphones, and every day challenged myself to sketch something that I thought could be better than what was already out there. In particular for me, I was really interested in the idea of bringing a product to market, a product that would help people's lives. And I wanted that experience. And I knew, you know, probably wouldn't have happened right away in SEAL Team. However, while I was in SEAL Team, I worked with a couple of SEALs and we would improve some of the products that we were using and we modified them. And that's not unusual. Randy Attrick with TRX, he was playing around with TRX while he was in SEAL Team. There were lots of SEALs that were constantly tinkering with their gear, like, hey, how can we make it a little bit better? And that's kind of the first main thing that I would share with folks. It was this curiosity of, I bet we could make that a little bit better. How would we do? What would be the number one, two, or three things that we can do to make it a bit better? And that's how the process of the notebook started. And so when I left SEAL Team, I ended up going to business school, and then I ended up totally failing with the first two businesses. And the third business was about to be a failure when we decided to shift products, a product that was highly patented, and launch the perfect push-up. I just, by the way, gave you 15 years right there.
Right, I know, in about a minute and a half. No, that's awesome. And then I know there's a ton of different pieces that are packed in there in those 15 years. So do you think, because I've interviewed a lot of different SEALs and special operators and things like that, do you think that the mindset is there before you go into that particular branch of the military, or is that developed through that? Because a lot of the guys that I've interviewed and talked to after the fact now, I mean, they've come out and gone to multiple business schools and have, you know, started multiple businesses and are these high achievers. And it's always kind of been a curiosity, is that something that is there before, but then it's just enhanced through that? Or is that kind of developed through the different teams and things that you're part of?
I would say it's both.
Okay.
Now, that may sound like a bit of a cop-out for an answer. If you were asking me, well, you got to pick one, I would say there was a high entrepreneurial attraction before even coming to SEAL Team. A lot of folks were self-starters. They were like, you know, I'll figure out a way to get something done. Did they go in thinking that they wanted to start a business when they went into SEAL Team? I don't think so. I think what would happen, though, is they'd say, well, wait a second. If I can make it through this, and I can do these things with these people, what if I had a smaller team? Because now I'm talking about going from 16 SEALs down to just a business partner. What could I do? And that confidence they gained going through SEAL training and leading SEAL platoons or being a part of a SEAL platoon would absolutely say, hey, you know what? If I can do that in SEAL Team, I can do this in the civilian world.
Yeah. And so, you know, it kind of sounds like it boils down to some of that, you know, is a mindset too. You obviously have a certain mindset as you go into it. And then during your tenure and everything, then that mindset is enhanced and developed more. Confidence is continuously built and things like that over the years. And so then when you are now out of the teams, you have that additional confidence level and that additional mindset level through those achievements while you were there.
I can't agree with you more. It would all be about mindset. You go through the three phases of BUDS, which is basic underwater demolition SEAL training. And everyone that I would come into contact with, like, oh, what kind of weapons did you get? Did you get the laser? You know, when did you get to use the remote control, blah, blah, blah. You don't use any of that. I mean, the thing, in the very beginning, we had like a little lead line with a piece of weight on it. And the whole idea was learning about your most important weapon system. And your most important weapon system, they call it your weapons platform, is you. Is the things you have control over. And that's really what I focus on in my most recent book, Unstoppable Mindset, is about focusing on the three things we can really control. And the more we start to appreciate that there's so many things we can't control, but the three things we can completely change our destiny.
For sure. And so what are those three things that you break down, you know, that we can control?
I call them as thoughts, focus, and beliefs. Everything else really is a derivative that comes off of those three. And those thoughts, the thoughts and the focus and the beliefs, they interoperate together to help you decide about taking one action that will build on another action, and so on and so forth.
Gotcha. And so then through your thoughts and beliefs and everything, then that allows you to set up where you're going, what you're doing, and being able to get through things.
Yeah. And if there's any future entrepreneur out there that's thinking about, well, you know, I've always wanted to start my coaching business, or I always wanted to create a fitness product, or I've always wanted to do X, I'm going to just offer this up to you right now. There will be three main obstacles you will always face when you're about to do something new to you. And if it's starting a business for the first time, it's new to you. And those three things are going to be starting, failing, and tiring. All entrepreneurs will run through that. Now, you may say, well, what's so hard about starting? You would be shocked at how many people talk about wanting to build a business. Don't right. actually take the steps to start the process. Starting, getting the momentum, building up the inertia to actually take actions that are new to you and committed actions is the first hard step. The second hard step is after you've taken a few of these steps and you're unsure of yourself, because you're, think of it like you're a captain in unknown waters of your own little ship, and you start failing, you start getting pushed back, you start thinking you're going to sink or capsize, keeping with our captain's metaphor there. That's when you start failing. And if you're not careful, what will happen is you'll succumb to your own negativity bias of saying, you know, I knew I couldn't have done it. What was I thinking? I should get that job, right? Every entrepreneur has had to deal with the major setbacks.
Right.
And when the entrepreneur then takes the setback and does a jujitsu, a martial arts move, a judo, where you use that as positive energy for you, where you've taken the problem and turned it into a possibility, or the opportunity, or the obstacle turns into the opportunity, then you've conquered number two, which is failing. And then the final is this point where we would say this all the time in SEAL Team, it's darkest before dawn. And sometimes we'd also shout out coldest too, right?
Yeah.
But the slogan, darkest before dawn, what it really means is right when you think, oh, I can't go on, it's too dark, there's no light, there's no hope, that's about the time you're going to make the turn. And so many people, and how many stories have you heard, Josh, where people are just like, yeah, I just gave up right before I got to the final end, right? But people give up right after they've done 95% of the work because they're like, oh, I'm just tired of grinding. And why? Because they allowed their focus to go to too much of the hard work and they forgot their perspective. So I'll get off my soapbox on that. Those are three really important things I want everyone to understand as they go on their own entrepreneurial journeys.
No, that's so true. I mean, you do definitely hear that. I know what's funny is like one of the things for me is I've owned 15 companies since I was 14 years old. And so the starting and the failing, I've never worried about. That switch never worked. So I just go after it, never worried about, oh, I'm going to fail or what is this? Or, you know, what happens if this doesn't happen? And, you know, would just boom, go. And I mean, obviously some things did fail or whatever, you know, business, you know, too early in the marketplace for something and didn't, like you said, wait long enough or things like that. But the starting and the failing part never clicked for me. So I just, boom, go after it, do it,
get you know what? It done. I would say you're rare. Of a lot of folks that I've coached, there, especially if you're making a career transition and you haven't been an entrepreneur and you're going from the safety net of an organization, they're thinking about that startup, you know, you starting at 14, well, you know, nothing different.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. So I think when you're 45 and you're going, like you said, taking that step over from corporate to, you know, a startup and things like that, that is the kind of the biggest great divide step that you're taking.
100%.
So when I was going through some of the notes and stuff, like in your book, you talk about like the, since we were talking a little bit about mindset and stuff, you had a mindset map. I think that was, you were mentioning in there and stuff. How can people understand that and then be able to start to use that to their advantage?
So I brought up just at the highest level a couple of minutes ago about these three things we can control. Thoughts,
right.
Focus, beliefs. That in its highest level are those three controllables. Now, when I put this mindset map and I dry out these pictures and I think in these pictures of when you deal with thoughts, the first thing I want everyone to understand is you got two main voices that we're dealing with. I call them the whiner and the winner. Whiner is a very loud voice. Why do you think you can do this? How do you know you can do it? You can't do that. You're not good enough. You got to wait longer, blah, blah, blah. And then the winner is the one that is much quieter. It whispers to you. It will say things like, get up. Keep going. Try it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Which thought we decide to choose, and by the way, the negativity bias will tell you that you need five positives to offset the one negative thought that you say. There's a study that I talk about, a neuroscientist who's figured out how dramatically impactful negative is in our psyche when we decide where we're going to put our next energy. On the focus of the mindset map, I want people to think of focus like a funnel. It funnels energy into taking an action. The energy is the thought that we decide to go in there. The rub with thoughts is they come in three forms: past, present, and future. What thought you decide to focus on is the one that will decide where you get your energy from. You think on negative, you're going to go down a path of more negativity.
Right.
And then once you take the action, well, then beliefs are what you will be looking at, and you'll be looking for a reason to believe and keep going. You know, in your case, and then you're going to generate another series of thoughts. And that's how all three of them work together.
Make sure you guys are paying attention, taking some notes, listen to what Alden's talking about and the whole process that he's talking about from the mindset map to what we were talking about with starting and failing and tiring and figure out where you are. Are you somebody that's not starting? Is that where you're getting hung up at? And then what steps do you need to take to start to push yourself past that, to take that action, to get moving today? Or moving past that failing, stop listening to that negative thought, that negative thing that may be pushing you back, pushing you down, like, oh, what, you know, I'm worried about this or that, and moving past that. And then the third, you know, with the tiring and stuff, as you're grinding through and you're pushing, you know, as entrepreneurs, we are always doing all the heavy lifting, especially when we first start out. But when is that right time to now bring in that next person to help offload some of that heavy lifting and stuff so you don't tire out? So I hope you guys are taking notes, really paying attention to what he's talking about today that can help you in your business or in your life overall. Alden, what's three things that you've taken away? So as you were in the teams and learning, whether it's leadership or execution or things like that, what are the things that you've taken away from there that you've been able to apply and it's been able to amplify your business successes and things like that?
I'd say the first thing that you take away, and you take it away in your darkest of moments when you're not sure you can make something. And, you know, everybody goes through SEAL training. They get a question mark at some point going, hey, can I keep going? I've never been this cold or I've never hurt this hard or, you know, whatever that question mark is. But when you decide to keep going, think about that source of fuel. The source of fuel comes from two different places. And I think of it like two oars in a boat that you're rowing by yourself. If you only have one oar, you're going in a circle. And those two oars are called passion and purpose. I don't care which one comes first, but they both have to be in the water. You got to be passionate about whatever it is you're doing. And you got to find purpose in what it is you're doing. If you're just passionate about something, but no purpose, that's kind of more like a hobby. You're super purposeful about something, but you have no passion about it. Well, you're going to get burned out. But you find those two. And that was one of the first things that really came out of SEAL Team that I used quite successfully to help me push myself over barriers that I weren't sure were surmountable or not. The number two thing would be understanding the connection between your health, your body, your brain, and your heart. Body is nothing more than a brain housing group. How well you take care of your body directly impacts the swim buddy in your brain. But remember, your body obeys your brain, but your brain needs your body to be in connection. Now, the other piece of this is then your heart. And learning to be what I'd call congruent between what feels right. And if you want to use your heart, your gut, the call to action here is not letting the ego or the logic of something in here override what you know is right. And there are going to be a lot of situations where you may have the opportunity to take the shortcut. I promise you, the shortcut is not a shortcut. It's going to hurt you in the long run. So learn that element. Those would be my three things.
Yeah, that's interesting too. You know, the whole shortcut piece you mentioned is we've always taught our kids, you know, that it's not the shortest route that's always going to get you there the best way and the actual easiest way potentially. It may seem like it initially, but it's that longer route that potentially is more challenging. That you may run into more road bumps. It may not look like it's the easiest or best way, but it's the one that's you're going to get there and you're also going to succeed at what you're doing overall.
Yeah, it's about building a foundation. And if you continually make those right decisions and continually look at ways to improve just a little bit, not a lot, like a tenth of a percent even per day, watch what will happen. You'll be in a little circle.
Question that, so we got a business, you started a business, perfect push-up was about to fail, you were saying, and then in 3 years, you guys did $95 million in sales. Obviously, what was that like quick turning point? And then what did you guys do to generate those $95 million in sales that you weren't doing before?
I raised $1,500,000 to launch this product. This is called Body Rep, Rotational Weight System. I then spent the next 4 years, $1,475,000 worth of ways not to launch this product. Okay? So I really want to stress to you, that money came from 37 of my closest friends and family. I was highly emotionally connected to not failing, but everything I seemed to do wasn't working. But I stayed committed for so long to this product that I almost went to the bitter end with no more money. As it was, investors were already saying, hey, it's over. Go get a job. You have to go bankrupt. You can't pay your manufacturer, your lawyers, your accountants. Forget about it. We made the switch to go to the Perfect Push-Up, a product that I had in my notebook since 1995. And this in 2006. And I was like, it's too simple. Like, you know, it's too obvious. And I gave every other excuse why I shouldn't launch the product. And at the end, I was like, you know what? I'll launch this product just so I can get back to launch this product again. Hell, very visual idea, right? And then you ask, you know, what did we do? In the very beginning, I mean, $25,000, we didn't have any money. So I used my wife's credit cards. I bought 3 ads in the back of Outside Magazine, Men's Journal, and Men's Fitness. And tombstone ads, you know, little itty bitty sliver ads. Wait, manufacturer, I gave him some more equity because I owed him already $500,000. They didn't want me to go bankrupt because they knew what was behind the bankruptcy.
Right.
Nothing. And so I had one container. And those ads led to a catalog called Harrington Catalog. People may be familiar with it. It was like a sharper image, but they had kind of high quality products in there.
This is pre-internet, people.
This was, it was 2006. I mean, we had
I guess it wasn't big yet.
We were on Amazon, but we're like, all right, we'll put a little store on there, but we didn't think much about it. Harrington launched it and became the number 2 product in their entire Christmas catalog. They bought everything we had. That gave us enough money to run a short form infomercial. Now, I had spent so much money already because I was doing long form, 30-minute infomercials. We only had enough money to do a 1-minute infomercial. All the infomercial pundits were like, won't work. First of all, that product is harder than a normal push-up because it engages more muscles. It's not stable, right? And they're like, people don't want something harder. They want something easier. And nobody finds a push-up fun. And I was like, well, I'm not selling to those people.
Right. I like push-ups.
Exactly. I'm selling to people like Josh.
That's right. So I bought some. The first version and the second version.
And so we launched a short-form infomercial in 2007. And really, I mean, we were selling the Perfect Push-Up in 2006, but the 3 years, basically in 2 years, we did $96.5 million in sales.
Wow.
The reason we listed 3 years is Inc. Magazine at the time, we got listed as number 4 in the country for fastest growing companies, but they do a 3-year average.
Right,
So we had sales, but you know, we didn't have nearly what we were doing those times. And it was really about the infomercial. And I would just share this with folks. We looked at the infomercial not as a business in itself, but as an opportunity to do what I would call transactional brand building. We're going to sell you a great product. You're going to be surprised at how good the quality is. We're going to get sales through word of mouth. And then retailers wanted the product. So by the end of year 2 or year 3, we were in 33,000 retail doors just in the United States and another 20,000 around the world by 2009. And we developed a lot more products after that. But last about how it started and how we did it, that's how we did it.
No, that's awesome. During kind of in that time as you were transitioning from the old product to the Perfect Push-Up, the body rev to the Perfect Push-Up. You had all these people like, shut it down. You had all that, you know, you're done. I mean, from a mindset standpoint, you know, that hit you and everything else. And from a leadership, I mean, you probably had some size of a team. What did that look like for you being the leader of that to be able to bring people through to now where you were doing, you know, $95 million in sales?
We could spend the entire rest of the podcast on how we did that. That's a very important question, Josh. I went to some investors, five investors, to see if I could get a little bit more money. That's when they came out and said, it's over. You have no money, blah, blah, blah. I had five people on my team. They were all waiting to see if we got another $250,000, because that's what we figured we needed to go cut steel, build molds, get some inventory, so on and so forth. We got nothing. And I sat in the room with those five of us together and said, look, we've got an option we have to decide right now. We got a choice. Behind door number one is bankruptcy. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's a well-played out movie. And I'm going to tell you right now, I do not want to star in that movie. And I'll tell you why. And I told them all the reasons of what would happen if we were bankrupt and how we basically would have flushed those 4 years of our life. And then behind this other one, I want you to envision what would happen if in 90 days we launched a product that really worked and was an industry gold standard. Would you want to be a part of that? What would that feel like? And we did an envisioning process, which I spent an entire couple of chapters in the book talking about envisioning, not just visualizing, but getting all the emotions there. And I will tell you, it wasn't one conversation. It was multiple times, sometimes many times a day, where people go, I don't know. I'll give you to this week. And if we can't get this done, then I got to go get a job somewhere else. That was what we did.
Obviously, from your standpoint, you know, being able to walk people through that whole process and, you know, and help them have that mindset to continue on and plant those seeds to allow them to see that vision and see that focus. Because a lot of times that's where people struggle with.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, man, this is what I'm doing. But then being able to share that vision with others and get them to buy into that vision, I think is where a lot of times as entrepreneurs, some do it really well and the other ones struggle with it.
It's very important. If they can't articulate what this vision is and get people to believe in it, it comes back to beliefs, by the way, then we're never going to see it. You know, the old adage, seeing is believing, believe is incorrect. It needs to be believing so you can then see it. Because there's going to be something way far over your horizon. You got to believe in it before you actually ever grasp it.
So we got a couple minutes left. And I know they sent me a couple questions they wanted me to ask from the book. The three levels of leadership and strategies that create or forge strong connections. What do they want to kind of get your insights on that?
Three levels of leadership. You know, you asked earlier about, hey, do you think SEAL Team, everyone goes in as an entrepreneur already, or do you think SEAL Team in some way helps them become entrepreneurial? I would say the large majority of them helps them. And the reason in part isn't just the confidence they get. It's the understanding that they realize we are all leaders. So many folks will start to get to the point of like, well, I'm not a leader yet because I don't have anybody reporting to me. You know, I'm a business unit of one. It's just, I'm not right. A leader. I'm an employee. I'm just an individual. Stop. The first level of leadership is you. It's leading you. It's leading yourself to get out of bed in the morning, leading yourself to do a workout, leading yourself to start your entrepreneurial journey, leading yourself to carve out time in your calendar to think of something where, okay, this is an area I need to work on and get a little bit better at. That's leadership. And how you lead yourself directly impacts level two, which is leading teams. Teams are nothing more than a reflection of a leader. The leader all starts with how they set their example. And then the third level of leadership, which I would consider the largest level, is leading the culture of the organization you create. That's your legacy right there. And they stack on top of each other. Leading you, leading teams, leading culture.
Where do you see, like, I guess, the biggest breakdown of that? Is it leading you? Is it leading the team? Or the culture
leading
as entrepreneurs
you.
Are growing?
You. Part of my business today is executive coaching, and I coach CEOs, And one of the greatest challenges that we have to work on is breaking down some bad behaviors that they've built up over time in a narrative of like, well, I don't have to do that. The other people have to do that. I'm just, you know, do what I say, not as I do. You must model what you want from others.
No, I think that's good. I think it, and I think that all distills down to as well as, you know, being a parent as well,
yeah,
too.
I mean, that's the greatest leadership challenge there is. God knows. I mean, I got four of them. And that's the hardest one. And I would say the most important one.
Right, for sure. I mean, I think it whether it's a team or your family, your kids, I mean, it all goes hand in hand.
100%. And the leadership I'm talking about, I don't care what kind of industry you're in, profit, nonprofit, non-government agency, government agency, you pick it. If there's humans involved, it always comes down to those three levels of leadership.
Awesome. Guys, again, make sure you guys, I hope you guys are taking notes. That's why I mentioned it early on. If not, rewind, watch, and listen to this again. Tons of amazing content and insights for you guys. I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for your time. Just an honor to have you.
Josh, honored to be here.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.